Case number 13-1315, Prairie State Generating Company, LLC, Petitioner versus Secretary of Labor et al. Mr. Moore for the petitioner, Mr. Waldman for the respondent.
Good morning, Mr. Moore.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm R. Henry Moore and I represent Prairie State Generating Company. This case involves the issue of what standard you use to review both the Review Commission, Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission, and its judges use to review decisions concerning ventilation plans and roof control plans. There are four plan provisions that are still in dispute, and I will say that nothing about them is exceptional. The principal one that was the battleground, I would call, is the 40-foot cut plan. And the evidence is undisputed. Most mines that use continuous miners have a 40-foot cut plan if they have remote control miners, and almost everybody has remote control miners. In this case, there was longstanding case law, as pointed out by Commissioner Young in his dissent, that said the standard was the Secretary of Labor had to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the plan proposed by the operator was unsuitable and that its alternative plan was suitable to the mine.
Well, the Seventh Circuit took the view that statutory structure was so clear that the prior positions of the commission were of no consequence.
I think the Seventh Circuit was wrong, Your Honor, for a number of reasons. If you look back at this court's decision in the Ziegler poll, it discussed that same statutory provision. And it recognized that ventilation plan provisions and roof control plan provisions were a different animal. They don't have the protection of notice and comment rulemaking under Section 101 of the Act. They are a process, theoretically, of negotiation between the operator and the district manager.
You're talking about cut length now.
Excuse me?
You're talking about cut length now?
Cut length, any of these plan provisions are a matter of negotiation between the district manager and the operator.
Well, why isn't that like notice and comment?
Excuse me?
Why isn't that like notice and comment? The Seventh Circuit said it was, and that seems a reasonable
And this
conclusion.
Court said it wasn't, Your Honor. The reason it isn't.
When you say we said it wasn't, you're talking about Ziegler?
Excuse me?
Are you referring to Ziegler when you say we said it wasn't?
Yes, I'm referring to Ziegler when you said it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that you have one operator and you have the might of the Mine Safety and Health Administration. And for that reason, as this court recognized in Ziegler, the negotiating leverage is uneven, but both the regulatory provisions put the responsibility on the operator to develop the plan, and the Act puts the responsibility, primary responsibility, on the operator to ensure mine safety.
In Ziegler, we didn't take any position on the meaning of 815G's cross-reference to 554 or 556, right?
That's correct.
So the question is, to me, is mainly what follows from that cross-reference.
That, I think what follows from the cross-reference is you're entitled to a full hearing before the administrative law judge, not an appellate-type hearing where the record is as it was before the district manager, but you are entitled to a full hearing.
By full hearing, you mean trial de novo.
Trial de novo, yes.
Yeah. Stedman seems to be often cited for the proposition that means trial de novo, but actually all it holds is that it's proof by preponderance.
That is correct, Your Honor.
On the other hand, at least two cases of this circuit that say that when it's proof by preponderance, that implies trial de novo.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor, and frankly, historically before the commission, it has been trial de novo, and specifically on plans cases, up until Mock Mining and Prairie State, it meant secretary had to prove by preponderance of the evidence that the operator's plan was unsuitable, and then prove that its own proposed plan was suitable. So I believe that what we had here.
But under our decision in Dole, don't we say that it's ultimately the secretary's responsibility? So yes, under Ziegler, the mine operator comes forward, proposes a plan, but in terms of whose decision it is, it seems to me that's actually been pretty clear as well.
Well, they make the decision, but that doesn't mean that Dole overruled Ziegler.
No, I think it's
because
consistent
Ziegler,
with it.
I think if you go back and look at Ziegler, what I think is the court was very concerned about is a district manager who imposes requirements outside the concept of what was contemplated by the Act, and that there has to be some review process. And given the secretary has final responsibility, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the arbitrary and capricious standard applies. I think.
But even under the arbitrary and capricious standard, that would capture and correct what you just mentioned, which is when the district manager imposes something that's outside, that's unlawful under the Act. That would still be corrected under arbitrary and capricious review, no?
Yes, in a sense. But the problem with the use of an arbitrary and capricious standard, particularly as applied by this ALJ, both in Mock and Prairie State, is it has, as I see it, upended the process of negotiation. It's turned it on its head. It's turned it into rulemaking. And the judge said, well, the district manager can only have this basic knowledge. Well, if they're supposed to have the final responsibility, you're relying on their expertise. And we can see here that that expertise is not evident. But what it did is you're going to be...
The expertise you're talking about, the district manager's expertise?
The district manager's expertise. And he's not a mining engineer. There weren't any... Yes, he was very experienced as a mine regulator, and he'd worked underground. The problem was...
And had at his disposal experts in each of the areas that was under consideration, in the ventilation and in the...
Well, he had at his disposal... Let's take ventilation. Mr. Esslinger, who had been a 30-year employee of MSHA and who retired in June of 2009, had that expertise. He was aware of the studies that we talked about. Mr. Roberts, who came in, was on a 120-day temporary assignment. And there weren't any particular indicia of expertise. And frankly, if you're going to look for expertise, to my way of thinking, you need to look at somebody who looks at the evidence. And let's take the 40-foot cuts.
Actually, on the 40-foot cuts, let me just ask, is that question, does that still present a live controversy for us? Isn't that now the way the mine is operating under 40-foot cuts?
It does continue to present controversy, because the district still continues to take the approach that if you want a new section with 40-foot cuts, even though every other miner, continuous miner in the mine, has a 40-foot cut, you've got to go through the same process.
Now, my question was, in the mine at issue here and under the mine safety plan at issue here, is it not the case that the district has acceded to Prairie State using 40-foot cuts?
We've gone through the evaluation process on each.
First, can you just tell me if that's yes or no, and then I'd love to hear your explanation.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
And the reason it's yes and no, we currently have approval for 40-foot cuts on our existing continuous miners in the sections where they are working. If we move them to another section or buy a new continuous miner, we will have to go through the same evaluation process. So it's not, it is still an issue.
And what's the state of play on the entry widths and the diagonal spans? Has that
I believe the
been accommodated at all or not?
The entry widths were they were given approval to go to 20-foot entry width. The ventilation quantities remain the same as they were imposed in the plans in 2009, and I frankly can't speak to the diagonal distances. My feeling is that they're still at 64 feet, but having said that, I can't say that for certain.
It would be helpful to know that if you want to just submit a letter or something.
Yes, I can submit a letter. But recognize that the issue of how you review a plan is an unending issue at Prairie State and every other mine, underground coal mine in this country. Because MSHA takes a position, if I open a new section, a working section of the mine, I've got to get a separate ventilation plan approval. There are endless plan approvals that are required. This is a critical issue for the industry. And the problem is it has been upended in terms of how you deal with it. Because if you look at it as a rulemaking, a district manager makes no record. And as you can see from this record, there's a disparity between what MSHA said went on at the meetings and what Prairie State said went on at the meetings. You know, Prairie State didn't bring in Mr. Hartsog and Mr. Gotti, who were their experts at the hearing, but they would, as I read the law at this point, you would have to do that. It's going to change it into an adversarial process, and that's not what was intended, I think, and it's not particularly useful. And I don't, frankly, think district managers are all that comfortable with the process.
Well, I mean, to the extent there's strong disagreement between the operator and the regulators, there's going to be an adversarial process at some level or two levels or more, right?
It's better that it gets to be an adversarial process once you get into litigation, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I'm eating into my rebuttal time. Would there be any more questions?
All right. Mr. Thank Waldman.
May it please the Court. First, to answer the question that's still hanging in the air about the, excuse me, one second. Thank you. The question that's still hanging in the air about the intersection, the length of the intersection diagonals, it's been approved to 66 feet. So currently the mine has authority to take cuts that are 40 foot deep, to have entries that are 20 feet wide, and to have intersection diagonals that are 66 feet long combined. And as Mr. Moore mentioned, the airflow requirements are the same as they were in the original plan.
So in any event, with respect to the airflow, we have the same issue that we have to decide about the standard of review. All right. I mean,
correct.
And what's your position on whether those accommodations render this appeal moot, at least with respect to those issues, or not?
They don't render the dispute moot, because as I would agree with what Mr. Moore said about that, that if the mine opens up a new section or a new unit, it's going to encounter the same issues, and the district manager is going to take the same approach. So the case is not moot. Having said that, though, what that shows is that the issue here is really one of timing, because this is, every parent is familiar with the child who wants to run before she can walk. And in a sense, this case is like that. This was a newly developed mine that had...
Well, that's a very fact-intensive issue, but there's a sort of structural issue, and that seems to me, what is it that the cross-reference in 815D to Section 554 means, and I notice you cite 554 as an introductory throwaway sentence on page 4 of your brief, but not thereafter.
Well, I'm not I thought we...
There's quite a lot of law on Section 554.
Yes, there is, and I thought we had discussed it later in the brief, and what we said was that that is the mechanism by which the 105D or 815D, if you prefer I use the codified, doesn't matter, okay, that section is the one that gives the commission jurisdiction, because under 105D, if the operator...
But it also has the cross-reference to 554.
Yes. And
so
if
that determines the procedure within
that's
that.
Correct.
Okay.
And it says that the Secretary has a standard of proof, and we do not dispute that. But what does the Secretary have to prove is the question.
Yes.
And Section 554 doesn't say anything about that.
So has there been an official resolution by the Commission that the unsuitability of the Secretary's plan is an affirmative defense? Because I didn't see that.
No, the Commission did not hold
it.
It
isn't an affirmative defense. What is it?
It is the Secretary's burden to show, by preponderance of the evidence, that the district manager's determination was not arbitrary and capricious.
That's not what preponderance normally means. Preponderance normally means that the person with the burden has to persuade the decision maker, by a hairline, if it comes to that, that position is correct. It doesn't mean that the any other position would be that it's free from being arbitrary. Preponderance has never, at least in my experience, ever meant that.
I understand
that. We have cases saying that when Congress prescribes preponderance, it does not contemplate review, it contemplates trial de novo.
I agree with that, but there's also case law that says that the preponderance of the evidence standard doesn't tell you what you have to prove by a preponderance of the evidence.
That's why I asked you whether you characterize the suitability of the plan as a matter of an affirmative defense.
I have. We have in our brief. The Commission has not.
It's a very puzzling scheme because so little is charted territory. But the way that I had understood the technical citation system to work is that the Secretary shows that there was in fact a violation of the mine safety plan, and in fact it's all but conceded, and that was the Secretary's affirmative burden, and then that the mine would say, oh no, but our affirmative defense is that your plan is not valid. In fact, our plan is a suitable plan, and you invalidly rejected it. But you're saying that's not, at least not supported by anything that the Commission has said?
No.
Is that consistent with your view? We have separate issues.
No,
we have who has the burden of, persuasion, what the standard is?
The Secretary and the Commission are in agreement on these issues. The only thing, there's a semantic difference in that we've characterized what the operator's defense as an affirmative defense, and the Commission hasn't used that language. But the Secretary and the Commission are on the same page here in that we both agree that when there's a technical violation, the Secretary's allegation, what the Secretary is alleging, is that the operator operated its mine without having an approved ventilation plan in place.
Right.
And in the context of a technical violation process, which we have here, that allegation is all but a technicality because The operator is conceding that to get into court in the first place.
Right. But I thought you had said that the secretary has the burden to show that the district manager's plan is not arbitrary and capricious.
That's correct.
And I thought that it was that the mine operator had the burden to show that it was, and that, in fact, that's what I think resides or is riding on the question whether this is characterized as an affirmative defense or not, is who has the burden. And if you characterize it as an affirmative defense, then presumably the mine has the burden.
Well, we analogized it to an affirmative defense. I didn't actually call it an affirmative defense, just because that seemed like a way of snapping it into focus. Maybe it had the opposite effect.
I thought it was clear until you got up here.
but it does underscore the proposition that neither the secretary nor the commission has made an affirmative classification of the suitability of the mine, as suitability of the plan, as merely an affirmative defense, right? In other words, the Seventh Circuit, to go back to my earlier question, Seventh Circuit said we don't have to worry about the conflicting views taken by the commission before it, because to the Seventh Circuit, the statute was clear.
Correct, but in Mock itself, the commission agreed with the secretary that the secretary did not bear the burden of proving the suitability of the plan. That's what the holding was in the commission's decision in Mock. And the Seventh Circuit affirmed that. Secretary does not bear the burden of proving the suitability or the non-suitability of the operator's plan.
Okay. And then now the Seventh Circuit didn't really address the meaning of the 556's requirement of preponderance.
That's right. The Seventh Circuit said that was superseded by Section 303-0 of the Mine Act, or 863-0, which says that which entrusts to the Secretary of Labor's judgment the approval or disapproval.
You know, I don't understand how that, when the issue comes up before the commission, I don't see how the allocation of the decision in the first instance to the secretary eliminates the ability of the mine operator to show by preponderance that the secretary is wrong.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The Mine Act specifically delegates that authority to the Secretary of Labor to make that call.
Yes, but subject to this proceeding under 554, right? So what is it that extracts from Section 554 its ordinary requirements?
It is the express delegation in the Mine Act to the Secretary of Labor to make this call, because...
And you're saying what flows from that is then reviewed under an arbitrary and capricious standard, because that's what it means to delegate?
Yeah. I didn't catch the last.
Because you're saying that what flows from delegating this to the Secretary of Labor is that it would then be reviewed under an arbitrary and capricious standard, because that is part of the package of what it means to delegate something to an expert.
That's correct.
Entity.
That's correct.
It needs to be explicit. Let me ask you, this might give us another way in. Is there anything else that is dealt with procedurally through the technical citation?
Yes.
Procedure. What other kinds of things, and why is this a technical citation?
Why is it a technical citation?
I mean, I understand that it has this sort of ginned up quality, but
it's a technical citation because there's nothing in the Mine Act that actually explicitly gives to the commission jurisdiction to address a plan dispute. And so through judicial construction and administrative practice over decades, what has developed is this technical citation process, where the operator will inform MSHA that it's going to operate without an approved plan for a moment. And so MSHA issues a citation, the operator contests it, and that's how you get in front of the commission to adjudicate the dispute.
And what else is done with it through a technical citation? What else is reviewed that way? Other kinds of issues?
Oh, the other thing that's reviewed that way are notices of safeguard. There's a provision in Section 874B, I think, of the Act, 30 U.S.C. 874B, which authorizes the secretary, which requires that safeguards be provided with respect to transportation in the mine within the judgment of the Secretary of Labor or his authorized representative. And so an MSHA inspector who's conducting an inspection of a mine, if he or she witnesses some transportation issue that he or she believes requires further protection beyond what the standards themselves provide, can issue a notice requiring the operator to provide a safeguard. And then the operator has to provide a safeguard. It's sort of analogous to a ventilation plan or a roof control plan, a safeguard is. And so now there's this procedure. If upon the issuance of a safeguard notice, if an operator disagrees with the safeguard notice, the operator can then use the same process to get a technical violation so they can adjudicate the validity of the safeguard notice.
So they go for another minute without the safeguard, and then they get cited, and then they comply with what the secretary
exactly.
wants, and then
exactly.
it gets adjudicated.
But to return to Judge Williams' point, I understand, I really understand where you're coming from, and I think the best answer is that if you go to 554, which cross-references, of course, 556, and 556 talks about the burden of proof unless provided otherwise by statute.
Yes, by statute. Okay.
And the Mine Act, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, let's assume arguendo that the statute itself makes the suitability of the plan an affirmative defense, so it doesn't really require any independent judgment by the commission or the secretary. But that still doesn't seem to me to eliminate the level of the burden, right? In other words, having to show that the district manager was wrong, was totally wrong, arbitrary and capricious, is a lot heavier than having to just show the district manager was wrong. I'm putting aside the whole question of trial de novo.
I'm beyond my time. I have a thought that could answer your question, but
and I have another question. I think if you're okay, we're okay going a little longer. Is that okay with you?
Go ahead. Yes.
So as Mr. Moore said, there was a dispute before the ALJ as to what evidence was even before the district manager when he made his decision. Well, that's what the secretary's burden of proof is when you get to the ALJ, is to prove you've got to establish what was before the district manager when he made his decision. And if there's a dispute as to what the district manager had before him, the secretary's got to prove that by a preponderance of the evidence that the district manager had X, Y, and Z before him. And if Prairie State says no...
That doesn't sound like an ordinary...
It's not ordinary. No, it absolutely is not ordinary. I agree with you 100%.
Are there any cases where the preponderance burden provided for in 556 has been hollowed out in such a way?
Mining in the Seventh Circuit.
Well, okay. But 556 applies in thousands of situations, but this is the only one where essentially it's stripped of its normal meaning?
Well, there are many other instances where cases come before a commission ALJ where they apply an arbitrary and capricious review standard to what was done by MSHA. One is the safeguard issue I mentioned before, but there's,
For example, if a mine inspector sees what he believes he or she believes to be an imminent danger, he can immediately issue a withdrawal order requiring that the miners be withdrawn.
Is that governed by 554 or 556?
Yes, it is, because if that order is contested by an operator, it goes before the commission under 105D, which refers to 554, and then the secretary is trying to enforce that withdrawal order, and it has been held by both the commission and by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal, at the very least, that what the commission does is reviews the MSHA inspector's decision under an arbitrary or an abuse of discretion standard. And that's just one example, but there's a number of others that I could give you where a commission ALJ's job is to review what the MSHA inspector did under the arbitrary and capricious standard.
And is that the same process that's used in reviewing emergency response plans, that the burdens are the same and the burden is on the secretary essentially to make the record and then show that the decision was not – make the record before the ALJ and show that the district manager's decision was not arbitrary?
Yes, that's what the commission has held.
And what's your response to Mr. Moore's point that this is going to push a lot more conflict and disputes into the process, the relatively informal process before the district manager? Is it a change, or is it?
It's not a change. In MSHA's view, it's not a change. And in my view, it's rather than pushing disputes before a district manager, it's going to encourage operators to marshal all their information and evidence and get it to the district managers so the district manager can make a decision based on everything that the operator is going to present to a judge if the case goes to a judge. But hopefully, if everything is given to the district manager, there'll be no need for the case to go to the judge. I'm well over my time, so I will sit down. Thank you.
All right. Does Mr. Moore have any time left? All right.
If I may quote from the CW Mining case that both the Review Commission majority cited as well as the Secretary. On page 1748, under suitability, it says, the Secretary did not object to assuming the burden of proving both that the old plan was no longer suitable to the conditions and the mining system of the coal mine, and that the new plan is suitable. It is not an affirmative defense, with all due respect.
I'm sorry, in what case was that?
The CW Mining case.
Yeah.
And it's 18 Federal Mine Safety and Health Review Commission 1740, and I read from page 1748. We have lost track, in a sense, in this discussion this morning, of the two standards under which these plans are developed, 75-220A1 and 75-370A1. Both of those standards refer to suitability. Now, obviously, the technical citation mechanism is simply creating a legal fiction, because nobody in this case or in any other case where there's a technical citation operates for a second under a non-approved plan. It's, as I said, a legal fiction. But if you look at those two standards, we're talking about suitability. Now, Solicitor made one comment to this is one issue of timing. This whole thing of the new mine, frankly, we think is a specious argument. One is the district manager wasn't going to approve it, and such an approach ignores the use of engineering and mine planning and the like. Prairie State went through a lot of analysis here.
But even under the commission's view and the secretary's view, the operator can get that stuff in. It just has to do it before the district manager, right?
That is the way it's set up now.
I take your point about that changing the character.
It will change the
relationship
character
from the way you envisage it. But
and I would submit that perhaps Mr. Waldman is not as familiar with what goes on out in the field, but I know of instances where operators have tried to do this, and they said, no, we don't want that in the letter to us, when an operator tried to put this sort of information in there.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't get that.
Well, what I said is that I have heard of instances where an operator has actually tried to put this kind of information before the district manager in a letter on a resubmittal, and they said, take it out. We don't want that in writing to us.
No.
The problem is, you know,
the process has already become rather litigative.
Well, yes. They're assuming they're going to end up there, but recognize that that's not what you want this plan process to be. Do you want the district manager having to create an actual record? Because that's the only way to resolve those disputes, is to create an actual record. And I believe I've run out of my time. Are there any other questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Call the next case.